From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Downtown.
ATL.
Pittsburgh. P-World.
Oakland. Corona Heights, San Francisco.
Coming up, we hear the real story of why new BART cars probably won't be built in California.
Well, there haven't been any domestic subway car builders in the United States for decades.
We'll remember Bay Area jazz legend Eddie Marshall.
Now, what the kids have done, the kids have access to all these different sounds. So instead of having a hi-hat going, they may have heard some gamelan music, Indonesian music.
And we'll meet the man behind the performances at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts.
Art is a conduit for social transformation. Art is an instrument for the making of culture.
We're taking you behind the scenes today on Cross Currents. This year is BART's 40th birthday. While some people say 40 is the new 30, when it comes to subway systems, 40 is just plain over the hill. About two-thirds of BART's 775 cars have been running the rails since the system opened, way back in 1972, when this song was a big hit for the Staple Singers. Somebody help me now. I'll take you back. By way of comparison, New York City, which has a fleet of almost 6,300 cars, replaces them every couple of years. Paul Overseer is in charge of operations at BART.
We have the oldest cars and we run them the hardest.
It's time for new trains. Building them won't be cheap. BART estimates it will cost more than $3 billion to replace all of its cars. And in some ways, building the new fleet will be as complicated as maintaining the old. KALW's Julie Kane explains why.
Talk to any random sample of BART riders, and you'll probably hear a lot of complaints like this.
I noticed my first week of using BART that the coat I wore was really dirty after sitting on the seats. So I carry now hand sanitizer every around.
And like this.
There's been several times that I've been on the train where we've had to put on hold and ask you to everybody get off and get aboard another train that's going to be coming behind.
BART's planning to replace all of its cars. Right now, three companies are in the running to build the new fleet. One is in France, one is in South Korea, and the third is in Canada.
You know, it's no surprise to me that these bids are coming from, you know, all over the world.
Scott Haggerty is an Alameda County supervisor who sits on the board of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. And he doesn't think the world should build BART's cars.
At a minimum, those cars should be built in the United States. But that's not even going to make me happy. Those cars should be built within the BART district.
On paper, it makes sense. Building BART cars here would mean keeping those billions of dollars and thousands of jobs where BART riders actually live. There's just one problem.
Well, there haven't been any domestic subway car builders in the United States for decades.
Paul Overseer is in charge of operations at BART. He says that even if BART wanted to give the contract to a U.S. company, they couldn't do it. The last domestic company that built subway cars closed up shop in 1987. But, he says, that doesn't mean no Americans will benefit from the project.
It's really a misnomer to say the cars are being built overseas. They're being built in the United States using American parts, using American workers. It just so happens that the corporation that's operating that plant is an international corporation.
To understand how this works, you need to know about a law known as Buy America. It's been around since 1983.
It doesn't make a difference if the company is foreign invested or if it's domestic, as long as the manufacturer occurs in the United States.
Scott Paul is the executive director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, an industry group based in Washington, D.C.
The idea is that through that taxpayer investment, we'll be supporting jobs in this country as opposed to in a place like China, for instance.
The idea of buying American has guided some of the country's signature transportation projects. As far back as 1933, Congress has required that federally financed construction projects use American materials.
We've had this policy through the building of the interstate highway system. Ronald Reagan actually expanded it to transit programs.
Almost three-quarters of the money BART is using to pay for the new cars comes from the federal government. Under Buy America, that means whichever company gets the contract has to do at least 60% of that work in the United States. But BART doesn't get to decide where in the U.S. that work gets done. They have to go where the companies are. So while the cars could be built in California, BART can't require that.
There's not an enormous demand for subway cars in the United States, and so it doesn't make a lot of sense for several manufacturers to have a permanent presence when the market is so sporadic and limited to just a few big city agencies.
Right now, none of the car builders BART is considering have plants in California, and that's what bothers supervisor Scott Haggerty. He thinks agencies like BART should be able to use federal dollars to do their projects in-state and to encourage companies to set up new plants here. Right now, that's illegal.
But who set that rule? I mean, when you say it's illegal because Congress said it's illegal. Congress can fix that.
Last year, BART officials sponsored legislation in California allowing them to give extra weight to bids from foreign companies that exceed Buy America requirements. So now the agency can legally reward companies that create more American jobs. But that doesn't change the fact that there's no infrastructure to do the work in California. Right now, the car builders BART is considering have plants in New York and Philadelphia. Again, BART's Paul Overseer.
But that's not to say that they might not open a plant somewhere else. It's a big enough order that the economics of it might be such for the car builders that it makes sense to them from a business standpoint to open a plant somewhere else. But that bridge will be crossed later on.
BART expects final bids on the new cars by the end of February. The agency hopes to make a final recommendation to the board in about 6 weeks. For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane.
What do you think about the Buy America rule? Join the discussion on our Facebook page. We're KALW News. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. Over the weekend, some of the music world's greatest talents gathered at Yoshi's Jazz Club in San Francisco to remember drummer Eddie Marshall.
That was cool, man.
When Marshall died last fall, he had been on the top rung of Bay Area jazz for more than 40 years. In 2000, he was the first recipient of the prestigious San Francisco Jazz Beacon Award for Lifetime Achievement. Reporter David Ross profiled Marshall in this piece from our archives.
Originally from Springfield, Massachusetts, Marshall started playing his father's band at the age of 14. Just a few years later, he thought he was good enough to take on New York City, the Big Apple, in the heyday of modern jazz.
When I moved to New York, I was 18, and that first year, I never had a job. Every time, I just couldn't hang. I could not hang. It was just the dynamic of New York. Even though I was hell on wheels in Springfield, it didn't register yet. And I was just a nut. My whole life was working and practicing. That's all I did. And I'd go to a jam session and Art Taylor and Philly Joe are there at the jam session. Now, what are you going to do with that? You don't play. You just sit there. You try to learn. You sweat and you're scared and you're wondering, what the f*** am I doing here?
Marshall was in the right place at the right time, learning at the knees of some of the legends of jazz drumming, even if he couldn't quite keep up. After a year of paying dues, Marshall found work touring with a brilliant young Japanese pianist who was making her name in America, Toshiko Akiyoshi. After a stint in the Army, Marshall toured with Dionne Warwick, who was churning out hit after hit in the 1960s.
I may go wrong and lose my way. Do you know the way to San Jose? I'm going back to find some peace of mind in San Jose.
That led to visits to the Bay Area. And when Warwick's pianist Mike Nock asked Marshall to join him in a Bay Area-based pioneer jazz fusion group called The Fourth Way, Marshall settled in. Marshall is known as a bebop drummer, but he says he's moved ahead as an artist because of his strong family life and his acceptance of all music.
So what is progress? Now, saying the lack of progress is staying in one idiom or staying in one style. Or maybe you can stay in that style and get the most out of that style, and that's progress. But to me, the music changes. The boundaries change. The need to branch out and do something new is just overwhelming. Now, I have a big, big family. Not just my immediate family, but I have a big family. I go back east, and of course, they know I'm the musician in the family. You know, so that's how I am. So I hear something and they want to know how to do it. Now, what the kids have done, you know, the kids have access to all these different sounds. So instead of having a hi-hat going, they may have heard some gamelan music, Indonesian music.
Marshall's openness has made him a favorite of not only jazz players, but fine musicians working in other styles.
He listens. That's his whole thing, is listening. You know, he's a drummer, and so first and foremost, he's an accompanist.
Latin drummer John Santos.
Even though he's a great soloist and a great band leader and a great writer and all of those things, you know, the drum set is an accompanying instrument and intended to accompany and lay a foundation, because at every moment, you know, there might be an opportunity to just add a little subtle thing that just completes the phrase and makes the magic happen. So Eddie's a wizard at that.
What are your memories of Eddie Marshall? Give us a call at 415-264-7106 to share them. That's 415-264-7106. Leave us a message and we might share your story in an upcoming show. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. Many creative types in the Bay Area, from writers to radio producers, performers and artists, are managing multiple jobs to feed themselves these days. It's a struggle for many, but for some, wearing different hats isn't a matter of survival. It's actually a way of being. Mark Bamudi Joseph is one such man. He's a poet, a scholar, a dancer, an educator, a director, and a performer. He helped found Youth Speaks and the Living Word Festival. And he's the new performing arts director of Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. KALW's Erica Mu sat down with Joseph on the stage at the Novellas Theater to learn more about the aesthetic future of the San Francisco Arts Institution.
So, you know, we're sitting on the stage here, and I'm curious, you know, you're the new performing arts director for the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Who do you envision as on this stage? Who do you envision is in the audience, and where are you?
You know, I think that art is a conduit for social transformation, that art is an instrument for the making of culture. And I don't think that culture happens in a vacuum, and I don't think that it happens in any kind of homogeneous way. I think that's the preservation of cultural and demographic ethic. But I think culture happens in the mashup. And so we'll have Vijay Iyer here, the jazz pianist, and Daniel Bernard Romain here working with The Twins, which is a hip-hop crew from Paris, right? So all these things are welcome. All these faces of our humanity are welcome. All exploring, I think, the core of our humanity: life, death, birth, love, hatred, austerity. You know, these are things that impact us all, no matter what your politics are, no matter what your aesthetic inclinations are. And that's what I want this building to be, because that's what the San Francisco Bay Area is. That's who we are. We are high culture, low art, outside and inside, margin and core. And that's the kind of performance and ethic and family that I want to grow here at Yerba Buena Center. Totally shifting, really divergent, always exciting, and accessed to something higher, giving room to grow.
And what is something higher? What does that mean?
All our brand, as far as performance goes, really, I think, stretches to the outer limits, I think, of what we conceive of and consider to be high art. I believe in shifting canonical points of reference that, you know, and I talk about this because I realized going home not so long ago, you know, listening to Pandora, that growing up as a, you know, as a kid born in 1975 in New York, the best writers in my life were all MCs. You know, I read F. Scott Fitzgerald or Dostoevsky or Shakespeare or, you know, whoever. I read all the people that I guess you're supposed to read. But I listened to Black Thought and Big Daddy Kane and KRS-One and Chuck D. Those were the writers that I aspired to write, you know, to write like and sound like. That hasn't precluded me at all or in any way from reading Junot Diaz or Daniel Alarcón or Edwidge Danticat or, you know, some of the great writers of today. I'm just shaped a little bit differently. And so it's that variation in shape that I want to honor. The different things that we read, the different music, the various publics that we're all accountable to. I want to continue to make ways through performance for those different publics, those different canonical points of reference to find home here.
That's Mark Bamuti Joseph, the new performing arts director for the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. I'm Erica Mu, and this is Cross Currents. You know, it's interesting that you said that the brand is about artistic excellence and that at the same time you're trying to reach the outer limits. What is going to change for the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts? You know, what are you hoping will change?
You know, I would like Yerba Buena to move from presenting risk takers, which we do successfully, to also being the site of the risk. So I mentioned the program with, you know, the twins and Vijay Iyer and Daniel Bernard Romaine. We're calling that night Classic Hip Hop. And we're inviting the Footwork Kings from Chicago, Lil Buck, who's a juke dancer from Memphis, some turf dancers, the Turfines from the Bay Area, and Jogjoba, which is a hip hop dance crew from Jakarta in Indonesia. We're inviting them all here to perform works to recorded music, but then to collaborate with these classical or classically trained and classically based musicians to demonstrate the same movement vocabulary to the works of Stravinsky and Bach and Beethoven with Coltrane and Davis inflections, right? So really dynamic artists that are pulled together to try something different, to be the site of the risk. There's an evening that we're planning for June of 2013 called Respond React, where we bring five artists in from around the world. And they each are given the front page of five major newspapers, New York Times, LA Times, Le Monde, Daily Telegraph, etc. And then given a week to create something based on the front page of these five global newspapers. That's the kind of ethic that I want to instigate here. Not only the polished and complete and sweet and sublime, but also the messy, the risky, the adventurous. And I want an audience that responds to that and artists that are hungry for that.
That's Mark Bamuti Joseph, the Performing Arts Director for the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. This is Cross Currents. I'm Erica Moo. Now, you're also a curator. That's what it says on your office door. And I'm wondering if you have to curate art that is good.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Who knows? You know, it's totally subjective. But for me, I'm inclined towards art that sweats and bleeds and cries. I'd like to think that I'm a smart guy, but I don't like art that's just in the head. I want art that pulls me by the hips, that hits me in the heart. And I don't just think in terms of good art. I think in terms of growth opportunities within arts experiences. So I really look at the entire experience. Who's in the room? Who's invited? Who feels safe? Who feels threatened? Is there risk happening? Do I get a sense of, emotional fluctuation? Are the artists writing and moving towards the break? Are we responding to the critical issues of our time? Are we writing in the verse of our times? You know, these are kind of the composite things, you know, that you might put together to create some kind of rubric, but I don't think that there's a checklist. I think that everybody responds to different stimulation in different ways. So for me, then, it always goes back to animal intelligence, right? Like, what strikes me at my marrow, at my core, you know, am I emotionally moved or intellectually or spiritually or politically moved to the left or to the right? If I'm able to come to a performance and feel nothing about it, that to me is an unsuccessful artistic experience. I could have been doing anything else. So I want to be moved. And, you know, that's what I lean towards. That's the performance that I'd like to bring here to the Bay Area, stuff that I can do more than just write about or think about or, you know, throw polysyllabic words at. You know, I want art that leaves me struggling days and weeks after.
That was Mark Bamuti Joseph. He spoke with KALW's Erica Moo. You can catch Joseph as he directs Tree City Legends this Thursday through Saturday at the Intersection for the Arts in San Francisco. The performance runs through early March. For more information, you can visit our website. It's kalw.org. It's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Hannah Baba, Julie Kane, Martina Castro, Jamie Katsoufis, Audrey Dilling, Fatima Duran, Chris Hoff, Artyom Skonohovs, Casey Miner, Nina Marente, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, and Alexander Victoria. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City CarShare, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City CarShare is online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you, we are a listener-supported radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll discuss the future of the Occupy movement.
It's time to start actually organizing instead of just occupying. You know, it's time to actually get out there, talk to people.
Also, we'll make a visit to Oakland's Chinatown. That and more tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. And we'll leave you with another edition of My Mixtape, where people leave songs that mean something special to them. Take it away.
My name's Max Jacobs, and I live in San Francisco. And my song is Clementine by the Sacramento band The Brodies.
I took the car keys and drove off into the night. Headed out for Vacaville and I cut back on 505. Pushed the 53 as fast as that bitch could fly. Bob Dylan's on the AM radio, keeping me alive.
So I live in the city now and I see a lot of live music. I actually book a lot of live music as well. But even then, it's sometimes hard to, like, motivate myself to, like, get out of the house and, like, go to the Mission and bike down there or find parking, something like that. So that's all kind of funny to me now because I grew up in Davis, about 70 miles north of here, and in high school, we would drive into the city on school nights to go see these shows. And we were just happy for any kind of access or exposure to such great music. You know, we thought we were lucky to live so close We would always, on our way back, stop at Berkeley and pick up some Blondie's pizza for the ride home. It was always totally worth it.
The music you're hearing is by Casey Turner. He's most often known these days as a promoter of other people's music, but he'll be performing himself next Sunday in an open mic evening. It's at St. Luke's Episcopal Church on Van Ness in San Francisco, beginning at 5 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.